In Ireland, half 10 means 10:30. In Germany, the same phrase means 9:30. Two people, both fluent, both confident, yet still an hour apart. That's not a translation problem, that's a meaning problem. And it's exactly why when someone says, "Nah, just translate it," it doesn't work for global companies. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of ServiceNow Insights. I'm your host, Bobby Brill. And today, we're digging into multilingual content and why it's not just translation and why it's a bigger business risk than most U.S. companies realize, and specifically what ServiceNow actually does about it. And joining us today is Leanna Solomon.
Thank you for inviting me, Bobby. My name is Leanna Solomon, Director of Globalization and Accessibility at ServiceNow. I focus on how global companies govern language, accessibility, and AI so they can deliver consistent, trusted experiences for all of their users around the world.
So this idea of multi-language and multilingual is not just about translating English into French, we're done. It's not just the concept of translation. Why is it not just translation? What's the difference?
For a global company, language is a part of the product experience. So every language, including English, carries context, culture, terminology, and risk, so that the real challenge really for a company is governing the meaning consistently at scale. So let me give you a couple of examples. For example, translation may be technically available while the native language communication remains deeply contextual. Like, for example, take a phrase, half 10. In Ireland, if somebody is scheduling a coffee meeting with their friend and says, "Let's meet half 10," they mean 10:30. If you are making reservations in German, it literally means 9:30. So technically, translation is completely correct. It's the same. It's technically correct. Context is very different, where you are ending up in the same place 1 hour apart. So understanding the user still depends on cultural conventions and context and how people naturally communicate in their own language. So for the U.S. company serving global customers, multilingual experience means actually understanding those nuances, and they need to, and the goal is to deliver grammatically correct language while still creating the right experiences for their users.
We don't use paper anymore. On screen, this doesn't look right, or now it is right. This has to be something that really requires a lot of decision-making and planning and thinking, and how do we go into this world of making this change of multilingual or multilingualism into being correct?
So take the word order. Let's put it in a business context. So we all understand English, but what does order mean by itself without context? Does it mean we ask somebody to order a sandwich? Does it mean we want to put a list of sandwiches in preferred order? Or it also can mean a purchase order, which is a noun, or a direction that can be a verb. So you cannot derive the meaning from a word alone. You need context and user intent. And that's what's important for companies, is the understand the meaning before translation even begins. So that is the way to communicate correctly, because the ultimate goal is to communicate with their users in their native language. And even in English, it is sometimes complicated. So when you start adding languages, cultures, and the conventions, it becomes quite a complex solution.
So how does a company actually get control over that?
And that's where language governance comes in. A lot of global companies prefer to actually have control over how they communicate with their users and what they say in which way, not just to be polite, but be precise. Once the ambiguity enters the picture, users will fill in the gaps. They have to guess. They have to assume. And they assume based on their cultural norms and standards, based on their experiences, etc. So if a company wants to be precise and communicate in the way they want to with their end users, they usually have some kind of language governance. And I include English in it as well.
You know, we talk about things like, how do you translate brand names? How do you translate pizza? I remember living overseas, and it's like, how do you translate the word pizza into anything? Like, we don't have an English word for it. You can't translate it into another, like, it's round bread with stuff on it. Like, what's the translation for this? There has to be context to this stuff. So this must be almost a Herculean feat for some companies.
And we give the control over what they translate and what they do not to our customers. If they would like to translate the word pizza, they can. If they prefer to use an English version of it, they can as well. Or if there are regulations that require them to translate every single word, then they can do that as well. And that primarily applies to product names, for example, and brand-specific nomenclature that they use across their products.
The idea of regulation is very important to this topic, and accessibility deals with a lot of regulation. For U.S.-based companies, we have concrete regulations that we should care about and think about. Talk to us about those regulations and why they are so important.
Accessibility regulations now start to include language regulations, especially in Europe. There are also specific regulations in various regions of the world. One of the strongest one is in Canadian province of Quebec. Companies who are serving customers there face legal requirements to provide key information and services in French to all of their users, including French language requirements for consumer contracts and related documents, and also specific regulations about what to translate, which are very inclusive. So also, the regulatory direction is expanding to AI. In European Union, there's an AI Act that went into effect in August this year, including and it includes transparency obligations for certain interactions and AI-generated content. And that part of it is language as well. So when you look at U.S.-based companies, language governance becomes part of their compliance governance. So knowing what must be communicated in which language and what that means also includes transparency across every market and where their products are used. This is the mandatory regulations, but most of the companies who want to sell their products to their audiences prefer to create user experiences in the user languages so that the users buy their products, because people don't buy what they don't understand.
So give us a specific example, a real use case that shows just how important multi-language support gets once you get deep inside a platform.
We are trying to meet the customers where they are. So ServiceNow provides 25 languages out of the box for the platform. However, many customers require other languages or other alphabets to cover their use base. And it doesn't often depend on the number of users for that specific language. So ServiceNow team, engineering team, creates ability for our customers to self-localize. We call it self-localize in any language or alphabet that exists on Earth. So we provide the translations for 25, but if customers need other languages, they can definitely self-localize our instances and their content in those languages. As an example, in various Australian, specifically public sector organization, they want to provide their content in Maori, which is New Zealand language. And there are not that many, users of Maori.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can't think of anyone I've ever met that speaks Maori, but they exist. And if they're your workers, I'm guessing that's pretty important.
Absolutely. And regardless of its 10,000 users or 10, if our customer wants to provide them with information in their native language, they should be able to. So we have customers who translate our software into Maori, or we have some Canadian customers who use Inuktitut as well as the language of the platform. We're very unique at ServiceNow, and in a way that we speak to customers in both product and engineering, and we learn about how our customers are using our platform in multiple languages, and that helps us not only define the products that we release for them to be more successful in those global markets, but also understand how we can optimize and automate all the workflows that do not require human interaction or even understanding of localization workflows. So often customers have very limited resources to manage this creation of multilingual experience. And the more we automate on our side, the faster they can get to success. And that's our ultimate goal. Our engineering team that manages internationalization is absolutely superb, and we're leveraging their understanding and their tremendous experience into language governance workflows and products that help our customers manage their international user experience at scale and with highest quality.
You mentioned that word governance, and there's a couple of things I want to ask you about that, because we've talked a lot about what we're doing and what the good is and why it is and how helpful it is for everybody. Because it makes sense if I can understand what you're talking about quickly and I can understand what you're talking about thoroughly, then I can do my job better. And that's key. That's what we want to be doing as a company. And that's what we want our customers to be experiencing. And everybody's happy, and this is great. What is the business risk, though, of not managing language and terminology consistently when you talk about a global scale of the work?
The biggest risk is losing control of the meaning as company scales. If you have 5 knowledge base articles, say a couple of catalog items here and there, it's easy to maintain. When you get to big scale, then, you know, terminology, taxonomy, meaning, style guides, etc., become extremely important to manage platform-wide language governance. You have to have the same context across all of your content. So if taxonomy, terminology, trademarks, and key messages are not governed from the beginning, inconsistently multiplies across products, teams, markets, languages, users. And I include English as well in this category since it is a language. So, and the visible cost of inconsistency is rework. So if your users are confused, if they have misinformation and you lose the trust of your end users, it does not positively reflect on your customer's growth. So language governance addresses that challenge at scale, and it guides communication upstream so the customers consistently understand the value, intent, and meaning of what the company is saying.
Well, talk to me about that. The AI aspect that we're all involved in now, this AI idea of AI readiness. What does that mean here when it comes to language? And why would the risk vary by language if we're all starting from the same point?
AI readiness means that AI can reliably help the customer achieve the outcomes they bought the platform for, which is greater operational efficiency, fewer resources required to run their business, and strong end-to-end adoption. That readiness may vary significantly by language.
So I know we've given a lot of examples, but give me another one that we can really understand in the ServiceNow of it all. Like a support ticket moving between English and French. What are the risks that show up?
So you speak English, I speak French, for example, and you want to open a case and log a defect in the platform. So you open the case, you log defect, and then you explain things in English, and the person in English understands the fulfiller, understands what you're doing, and then fixes the issue, and you get the confirmation, you approve the solution, you're done. So that's the normal workflow in English. So a user in French, me, opens a ticket in French. Then the fulfiller is speaking English, trying to figure out what I said, responds to me and said, I solved it, and I read it in French, translation from English into French, and decide, no, I don't know, it's not solved. I still have the problem. So I write back in French saying that's not solved. The English user says, of course I solved it. And so back and forth is happening. So it takes me a week longer to solve my problem than it takes you to solve it in English. So as a French user, then what I can do is then go to the translation service and start translating everything into English, knowing that the person who is responding is English. So what if the person is Spanish? So you get into complexity, language complexity, language pairs, and then the solutions. And then you also can factor my locale. If it's HR, it has to be a specific locale. Or if I am on a instance that's running on a, say, German data center that is in Germany, like all of those aspects keep adding. So what I'm saying is that usually with LLMs, all of this information is hard to program from the very beginning.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that someone in Germany actually speaks French, who's talking to somebody who actually speaks Spanish, and it's coming down to a KB article that's in English.
And all of them are or will be using the LLMs to translate the communication back and forth. So you might be translating the same thing over and over again, perhaps losing the meaning. So what happens is that while you're doing all of this, you're using tokens. And tokens are in different languages, have different cost. Certain languages are not as fluent or not as good translation-wise as others. Like if you talk about French and Maori, Maori is not a very easy language to translate because there's not enough content to train LLMs on that. So there are all kinds of low content languages that are having issues in LLMs. So all of this comes into consideration for big companies that only want good, accurate translation and user experience for their users. And that's why when companies are focusing on usability and getting to the outcome versus just the translation part, that's when they deliver better outcomes to their users.
And I get that now. That's really what this is all about, that language governance is what turns We Support 25 Languages into something a business can actually trust. And it's not that translation layer just stuck on top of it. It's control over the meaning and of the risk and how a product shows up for every single user, the customer's customer, as it were. And that's why ServiceNow's globalization and accessibility team builds directly into the platform. So before we wrap, Liana, give us a closing thought. What do you think we really need to remember?
Absolutely. And that's what I think differentiates good product from an excellent product, is the joy that you experience. And joy comes from understanding. First of all, you're trying to figure out, does your product solve my problem? And if I think it is, then the next question is, how does it solve it? Am I going to spend more time figuring it out, trying to set it up, using it, or is it providing a simple solution that actually simplifies my life and solving it with the result that I'm expecting? And all of those decisions in the user head happen in their language.
So there you have it. The decision-making that's actually going on inside of your head is what's important. I want to thank our guest, Liana Solomon. Please hit subscribe on whatever device you're listening to so you never miss an episode, especially as we deep dive into this topic a little bit more. And please check out the show notes for more links to past episodes and for more information. I'm your host, Bobby Brill. Thanks for listening.